Natalie Zvaznikar. Natalie, I hope I said that right. Our state representative is with me on the phone. She is a regular contributor to the papers. And Natalie, I just so appreciate how much you make an effort to stay in touch with your constituents. So thanks for being with us here on KTWH.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So you just wrapped up your first legislative session, and I know you've already communicated with us a lot about it. Is there any one thing that stands out for you that you'd like to highlight or share? You know, what did you get out of this first session of yours?
It's a continual learning curve, but I think the most surprising thing for me was that we started with a $17.5 billion, and billion is something that I don't think any of us can wrap our brain around, even talking about $1 billion. But we started with a 17, depending on what numbers you're going to look at, between $17.5 and $20 billion in a surplus. So it was surprising to me with that kind of money, and $12.5 billion of that is one-time money coming from the federal money, from COVID relief money. So we really had a much smaller, under $10 billion was money from taxes and revenue. So we spent all of that this session with the policies that were enacted. So I think that was the most shocking thing. And then we added $9.5 billion more in taxes. So to me, that's concerning, because when the tide turns, if it does turn in any way, and there's always cycles in society where there's highs and lows. And in my lifetime, I've seen both for the economy. And so that is probably was the most shocking to me, that we wouldn't have prepared for more of a cushion. As the seniors I've cared for my whole life would say, you need a rainy day fund. And I'm concerned we don't have one.
Mm-hmm. And I hear you. You've mentioned several times your disappointment in the way the money was managed, essentially.
Right. Yeah. I think, and the thing that was shocking to me is every dollar we have that goes to government comes from taxpayers. And so it was surprising to me that there's millions, and not just 1 million, because you're going to have things when you're distributing programs to the magnitude you do at a government level. I've worked in St. Louis County when I started my career and participated at county board meetings, so I understand there's a lot of complexities. But when you have 250 million leave in a program of a CCAP, which is child care, and we still didn't put the mechanisms in place to track and audit money and follow money when you have computerization and systems to do that, especially in Minneapolis, St. Paul, they have all the broadband down there, to be able to track these things and do data between agencies, to me is a misrepresentation for taxpayers, because that's a lot of money. And if it's happening in programs that we already have right now, and we're going to add three more new government departments that will just increase that potential for fraud to happen, because if you don't close the gap and the opportunity for people to figure out how to swindle money or do things, it will always happen to some degree. So we need to have systems that are tight.
Mm. Yep.
And government, just like you do anywhere else, in a household or a business. I mean, to me, it's just common sense.
Yeah. What would you say is going to be your focus coming up now?
Well, the focus for me in this last session was the nursing homes, and we got that done on the last day.
Yep.
And now my next step thing is housing for middle-income people, and also child care for working-class people. And the child care, we lost 1,000. When I started session, I was told, when I looked at the data, that we lost 700 child care providers in the COVID years. And I just got the data 2 weeks ago, and we've really lost 1,000 family child care providers. And we haven't lost a single child care provider that does center-based child care. And even the center-based child care that I've met with them in Two Harbors and in other communities, they're struggling with all the regulations and the bureaucracy to even make it profitable to even stay in business. And many of them are considering closing even in that lane. And we passed money to help child care centers, but it's tilted more to that. And it's also tilted a lot more to Minneapolis, St. Paul. And I'd like to see more equity with greater Minnesota and rural Minnesota. I think it's tilted heavily to Minneapolis, St. Paul, and I'm going to be fighting for that.
Meaning, when you say centers, you mean rather than being in homes, that there's just centers, like professional places.
Correct.
That are childcare. And you're saying that the way that it's set up, it's easier to have a center than it is to have a home? Is that so?
Correct.
You'd like to see
Correct.
More
and
homes?
The licensing is different. The licensing is different, and it's more favorable on the center side in the sense of the ratios, the regulations, and some of those things. And when you drive to the cities, you'll see centers everywhere along the freeway, New Horizon. There's just a lot of different academies, and they're great. When I was a working mom, I used both. I had a great center at Benedictine, and now they've closed. And then I had a family childcare on Lakewood Road, and they've closed. So there's just, it's hard for people to stay in this business. And as much as families know that they're paying a lot of money for childcare, the actual ability to break even or make it possible for somebody to do the business model is not there, because it's very expensive. And we just increased funding to allow the staff to make more money in those settings, which is a great thing. And so now we just have to see how it's going to work.
Yeah. And you were saying they were, are you saying they're leaning away from solving this problem via deregulation, and they're just sort of putting more money into it? Or I didn't quite catch that part
Correct.
Of what you were saying.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the regulations are as extensive as, I've looked at the child care regulations, and they're really modeled a lot after the very similar style of regulations that nursing homes and assisted livings have faced. And when I say that, if one negative outcome happens, they write a policy to blanket the entire state.
Yeah.
Instead of dealing with an isolated situation in a reasonable manner and one provider and dealing with that, whether it's a center or a family child care, and then helping them get back into compliance or looking at the scope and severity. And so the paperwork is monumental. And then the cost of food has went up for everybody. So child care providers are buying food for children too. And so if there's not systems in place on who's paying for the food, if you're taking people that are private pay only or people that are on assistance with the state of Minnesota, what's the funding mechanism? And are those formulas the same for family-based and center-based? And then how are we going to do it for people that have shift work? You know, most of the people that have work shift work in manufacturing or nursing homes, assisted living, disability centers, fire departments, hospitals, ambulances, all that, those staff, police, they need to have child care providers. And so many people aren't lucky enough to have family that live in the same community, and they need shift work because they run 24 hours a day. And many centers work Monday through Friday on a day shift. So family providers have typically been
right.
a staple to allow people to work to bridge that gap, especially in greater Minnesota. And families trust many, they know people in greater Minnesota. They have, it's smaller communities. They have, they're relational. They know the centers. They know the family agencies. And so I want to make sure we have both. The more options we have for families, the more you're going to get the shoe that fits.
Right. I would imagine that I would think that you'd want it to slant toward homes. I mean, having a child in a home, in my mind, would inherently be more, I would prefer it, like for my kids.
Well, but the regulations have changed so much since even I was there, where the child can sleep, how many babies you can have, how many infants you can have. It isn't based on the provider's length of serving or their knowledge base or what they can do. It's just based on, you know, objective numbers, and that's just not how reality works. You have to look at the needs of the kids. If you have children that are asthmatic and, you know, need to maybe not sleep in a certain setting because they're elevated up. And
right.
you know, when my son was young, he slept on the couch. That wouldn't even be possible today. And with the way I've read the regulations, they're very limited in what they can do as far as what's in the crib. And I understand everybody wants to have safety. Safety is number one. So I'm not saying I would want to propose anything that doesn't protect children. That has to be the number one thing. And so as I go into this next session in 2024, it's really to me all about the kids. What do we need to do to protect kids for child care, for families, all the way up? Right now, sex trafficking is fifth in the state for Minnesota, in the country. And so kids are at risk for a lot of things. And I want to make sure Minnesota kids can read. I want to make sure we're not a fifth in the country for sex trafficking. I want to make sure that families have quality child care. So my first session was about seniors. The next session is about kids.
Wow. I love the theme. Bringing it down to basics. And we'll keep being able to return to this theme as this session happens. So thank you for that focus. I love it.
Well, it's just to me, you know, I signed on a bill even in one of the communities I represent. They were concerned that repeat offenders for sex offenders were being released in their community. So I signed up some strong bills that don't allow that they have to have ankle bracelets and monitoring and different things, because I think we have an obligation to protect our kids. If people say they're going to offend another child again in a sexual manner, we can't wait till a negative outcome happens. We need to protect kids first. And there's a lot of conversation on rights, but we also have to talk about responsibilities, and we have a responsibility to protect kids. It's way beyond a moral compass to me. It's an absolute adult responsibility to protect kids.
Right. I mean, I think the devil's in the details with something like that, because I do think
it's
all about, I mean, yeah, there are many sides to play in, and you'll just have to be working through it in the details of what's fair.
Right. And I think we have a lot of opportunities. We had this last session was great in the sense that we gave $2.2 billion to education. And, you know, I was hoping we were going to get the 5 and 5 on the formula, which was 5% for each biennium in each year of the biennium for the school districts, which would have allowed Two Harbors to have $1 million more for education to close the gap on reading proficiencies at grade levels and mentoring and new curriculum and new books and everything to help with teachers and education on the science of reading. To go back with phonics, and when I look at the state data on when reading scores started to drop, it's obvious to me we need to do some of the times what we did in the past worked great, and we don't have to try something different. And it's great to try different things. I have many times, but if it doesn't work and we have 30 to 50% of our kids in Minnesota that can read at grade level, this was happening before COVID. So we can't even blame it on that. And if you can't read, that's the greatest discrimination for a child, because they're not going to be able to hold a job and their earning potentials are going to be limited the rest of their life, regardless of race or gender.
Yes. All right, we are running close to being out of time, but let me just quickly ask you, you've talked a lot about bipartisanship and the ways you work with Senator Hochschild and others across the way. I know that it can be really difficult to maintain that in the political climates that you are always in down in St. Paul. I know there's good things and there's some not so good things. How are you going to manage this as time goes forward? Is there anything you can say to that specifically?
My whole life, I never knew who a Democrat, Independent, or Republican was, and that was never my focus. I didn't care. My goal was, what is the goal? What is the common goal of what we're trying to accomplish? And it was to give great care to seniors, provide a great place to live, work, and visit for our staff, our families, and our seniors. And I think the same goal, if you hold true to what is the goal, what are we trying to do? Is it all about, it's all about seniors, it's all about kids, it's all about community. And I look at it that way. And then once you're elected, you represent all the people. So you have to be willing to listen to both sides. And that's why I wanted town halls and to listen to both sides, because I think you get a balanced approach and you make sure the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. And that's what Senator Hochschild and I did on bonding. You know, I signed on and at the House level for the Highway 61 gap funding. And we were fortunate enough to have a $17.5 billion surplus. So that was a gift from the heavens. So when you have that, the major corridors got the funding, like Highway 65 and I-169 in the cities, to get some of these projects safe. And I think roads and bridges are a priority. Education's a priority, public safety and education. And so we worked on those types of things where we could find common ground, legacy. Everybody wants clean air, clean water. And so the things that we can do with trails, we got some great trail systems for the north, and looking at those things, a land transfer had to happen on Lake Superior. We got that done. And so we look for opportunities, because the first priority is what's best for the people in the district. And then the second thing to me is what's best for the state. And then the third is looking at my family and myself and the party. And, you know, so to me, I think it's our responsibility. We're elected by the people that voted. It's a very split, you know, I won by 33 votes. I think he won by 700 votes. Neither one are a landslide. The majority of people are in the middle. It's very obvious to me when I'm out talking to people, and most people want reasonableness. They don't want extreme to either side.
Right. Well, and I would consider myself in there. So thank you so much for joining us and for all your thoughts, and we'll have you again soon.
Yeah, thanks a million, and have a great day, everybody, and a great weekend. Heritage Days was a blast.
Oh,
thank
yes.
Thank you to everybody who coordinated it. Yes. It was a lot of work for people, but they did a great job.
Yes, great little shout out there. All right, until next time, bye-bye.
Have a great day.
Yep, bye-bye. Natalie Zalesnikar, Senior Representative of that